woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining.
Lone Wolf Pack, Slash and Jacks, I'm Tamao. Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 39. NASDAQ Futures up 181. We had good earnings out of both Google, Alphabet, Google, and Microsoft. Microsoft, very strange. It was down a bunch yesterday and then kind of came back along the close, and then now it's up a bunch today. So I don't know, whatever people thought the earnings were going to be, they came in better than that. So now today we're going the other way. In the top seven stocks, got NVIDIA up again. So looks to be a good day here. We will see. Do we have Mr. Kevin?
Good morning. You do.
We got so much stuff to talk about, Kevin. It's
But you know what, Tom? I may not be able to keep doing this because yesterday the president and Representative Ocasio-Cortez and Senator Markey announced that they are starting up the new climate corps, and I may have to run away and join it. I may have to go in as a private, but I'll bet you I could be an officer in no time.
I'm going to say a buck private.
Yeah, or something that rhymes with it.
Yeah. What the, climate corps, what are they... Obviously,
you get a chance to work to defeat climate change while learning all about it in the process. 2,000 spots. Money well spent, no doubt.
I have a question for, for listeners and for my friend Kevin, who's Mr. I think if you came back in life as a dog, Kevin, you'd have to be a terrier. Just saying. I can't envision you as a poodle.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd be a terrier, but I'd be a rather chunky one.
Well, it's, some of those guys are. My little guy Scruff was kind of chunky, but he was very focused. If all of a sudden you and I became like real politicians, right, and we're running for office someplace, I wonder how some of this, I'll use the term crap, running around is like this. You know, people are just focused on this climate stuff. You know, people are focused on, I don't know the answer to this, so I'm just lobbing it out there. You know, people are absolutely focused on, you know, fossil fuels. I mean, it's crazy. It's like a thorn up there behind it. And it's, you know, I'm not saying it's, you know, it's something that over a period, over the next century or two, should rely less on some fossil fuels, of course. You know, doesn't mean we're going to try and do anything with nuclear or anything like that. We're just going to bitch and moan about fossil fuels, right?
Well, I'm not willing to say of course on that, Tom, because there's a lot we do. I mean, first of all, you know, we kind of have a whole world economy built on fossil fuels. But
yeah.
Aside from that little detail.
That's a problem. That's a big detail.
It's a bit of a problem. But aside from that little detail, can we use fossil fuels and continue like we already have been doing to continue to make it cleaner?
Well, without a doubt. No,
I don't think there's anybody out there that says, well, I don't want to do things that are cleaner and cleaner over time.
I don't think there's anybody that says,
I don't want a clean planet. But I'm also not willing to turn over, everything we do to a bunch of people who have been saying we're 8 to 10 years from climate Armageddon, and they've been saying that for about 50 years probably.
Well, I'm with you. My you know, we've lost, don't want to go off on a tangent, we've kind of lost the natural gas initiative, Kevin. Remember, I reported, actually, we tried to get one of their guys on the air, but I think there was an illness in the family. Didn't the Ozenga brothers, or Ozenga family in Chicago, does a lot of the concrete work, didn't they put a whole bunch of gas, natural gas concrete trucks out there for a while that were so much cleaner and blah, 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 and cheaper to run? And there actually were a couple of natural gas filling stations here in Chicago that, of course, are closed because nobody... And the weird part is the gas company doesn't even have natural gas vans, which is crazy to me, but...
That is a little weird, don't you?
Yeah,
over where I live, you know, in South Bend, you know, they have the whole bus system runs on natural gas. And, you know, it says it right on there, cleaner burn and all that. I don't think I've heard... the transportation secretary, the current transportation secretary, say a darn thing about his proud initiative to...
No. But I guess what I'm saying, Kevin, is you have all these factions, and I actually read some stuff a few months ago, and I don't... It's pretty interesting, and it was talking about governance in the U.S. and how difficult it is, because it's a huge place made up of all kinds of different people, different areas, different, I mean, farmers are different than stock traders in New York. I mean, not different as people, but just all kinds of different motivations on everything. And I'm thinking that if you and I all of a sudden were to, you know, the proconsuls, like they used to have in Rome, where they had two guys, if we're sitting in the Oval Office, I think even you, don't take that bad, even you would sit there and go, hey, Kevin, these people are kind of a pain in the butt. Why don't we go out tomorrow? And even though our energy production is going up by the minute, it appears, not dramatically, but it's going up. Why don't we throw these idiots a bone and say we're gonna cut leasing or oil drilling on a third of the federal leases when we know nobody's ever gonna drill there in the first place?
But that's not how it works, Tom. Because which third are you gonna pick?
Well, everybody knows
the leases get signed. Then there's the exploration, and to determine which ones, you know, depending in part on economic circumstances and in part on the productivity of the wells themselves, is when they're going to decide.
I'm not talking about where there's
so
wells.
When you say chop a third, are you going to go say, you know, you can drill there, you cannot drill at this place?
There are,
because they don't know yet.
There are incredible amounts of U.S. lands that are leased by companies just so nobody else can get them, that nobody's ever going to be there. There's not a pipeline, there's not a road, there's not anything. You could cut out 25% of it and it wouldn't do anything to anybody. The same thing with this initiative this week. Let's throw these guys a bone and put some group together and send them God knows where. Act like we're doing something, we're not doing anything. I mean, we would find a way to pacify
that's
people.
That's really fine, Tom, except that throwing people a bone is expensive, and we don't have it.
It happens all the time.
That would be just fine with me, I suppose, as a way of operating, if we weren't so damned in debt and we could afford to do that.
I get it, but I'm saying...
so irresponsible with everything else that we don't have time for nonsense initiatives. We don't have money for nonsense initiatives.
Kevin, I'm just saying, if you're trying to get votes and approval from people, and you end up, I use the term, well, the word compromise is there. Every time you take a little piece off your principles to get something done, you and I are absolutely on the same page of this. When do you lose your principles? But every place you go to talk to a different group, you can't tell them pound sand. You got to have some accommodation for people along the way, because not everybody's 100% wrong. That's all I'm saying. I mean, you find a way to include people, even if it's not a lot of dough, or maybe even come up with a program that actually does some good that both of you can agree on. I mean, that's part of doing this stuff. I mean, it just is. You can't just say, you know, totally screw the entire environmental initiative. Because, by the way, the environmental initiative in Chicago, you can actually breathe the air here. 40 years ago, you couldn't. I mean, so it's not like it's all bad.
Yeah, so what'd I tell you? We're already doing this stuff. We're already using fossil fuels, and we are agreeing, but it's fun arguing while we agree.
Yeah.
But we are agreeing, but yeah, we're already, you know, making all kinds of strides on, you know, and continuing to. We've done it for decades now of making a cleaner planet. And, you know, heck, I remember when we were kids, people used to throw their garbage out the car window when they were, you know, when they had, we were eating some food or something like that.
There's still neighborhoods where that happens. Yeah. Just saying.
Can't help the greens.
No, but then if you got the biodegradable, you know, stuff, I mean, you know. I do think that, well, hey, what about, we got to talk a little bit about the draft, because with Carl, we're going to go over this, these city numbers. Actually, I might go over the city numbers with you. What about this, you know, Kevin, where are we going? I like watching football as much as the next guy. But, I mean, last night I met a client. I'm driving home. It's later than I usually am, but I'm watching listening to one of the sports stations. And they're talking about this Bears guy, this Caleb Williams. Well, all the guy does is talk. You know, I hope he's good, blah, blah, blah. People like to watch him. And these two guys are talking about the end wide receiver they drafted in the 9th pick. How they threw passes last week together and how much they loved each other. And they get into this, they might actually like be roommates and stuff, and I'm sitting there going, give me a break. First of all,
they won't, because right. They're both going to make a lot of money. They're going to get their own places. But yeah, well, that's stupid talk. You know, you're talking sports radio, Tom. Expect a fair amount of stupidity. Don't let it disappoint you.
Like, I guess this whole concept of a draft of people, is to me is so un-American. I can't even go there. But I, you know, no point in fighting that argument. And I know Lou. I love arguing with Lou because, you know, Lou, he could be the smartest guys we've ever met, and honest to the day, and a great friend. But it's funny how you talk to the attorneys, and he'll say, "Well, it's all in the collective bargaining agreement." I go, Lou, the people that are drafted weren't part of the draft. Of the collective bargaining, they were in high school. How do they get? It's like the, you know, whatever. No point in walking.
Yeah, but you want to go to work in a union shop? You got to go abide by the collective bargaining.
Well, but I mean,
I get it. I get the structure, and fans love the draft, and the draft gives them a whole off season worth of publicity and fan engagement and so on. So it works well for a lot of people. You know, what would the allocation of talent be like if there were no draft? It'd look like college sports.
It'd look like accounting firms. We managed to get it done, or security firms. It'd be like every other business, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
but remember, when you're saying this now, I don't want you complaining about the setup in college.
I complain about all of it. I mean, to me, it's all.
Yeah, I know.
It's
because that's just you.
Well, I know. I have these kind of economic principles that you have. You know, a lot of principles as well. And I mean, what are we doing here? The idea that these guys have, the people ahead of them determine how much they can get paid. The idea a few years ago, we used to have people before the last collective bargaining agreement. There were people, you know, on the exchange floors, and I was still on the floor. You know, really bright people. How can some people be so bright and be dumb as a rock? In other words, guys would go, oh man, do you believe how much the Bears had to pay this like first round pick? This isn't right. And I go, the guy can't go anywhere else. He's a college kid coming up against the Bears legal team, and he can't go anywhere else. What makes you think that he's got the wool over the Bears' eyes? It's the other way. What's the matter with you? Whatever. I still think the poster in the one bar, Kevin. Everybody else in the world's job is easy, and by the way, they're paid way too much, except you. Just saying.
And that's that happens to be true, at least in my case.
Oh, absolutely. It's mine too. Anyway, hopefully this kid will be a decent quarterback. The Bears sure need one. What do you suppose?
They've sure given him the weapons to be good.
Well, he's still in a line.
I think he has five guys that can play, assuming they're all healthy. And actually, it's weird when offensive linemen get hurt, because that's the one position that just doesn't get a lot of injuries most of the time. But I think they still need to accumulate a couple of linemen, and they also have linemen from last year that we'll have to see what they do. But you get someone like a Nate Davis, who didn't play a lot last year because of injuries, who was very good. So they'll get him back if he's healthy. It's always the if he's healthy thing. But I still would like to see them come out of this draft or come out of free agency with another starting offensive lineman. And they, you know, the marquee free agents are all, you know, are pretty much signed. But there are lots of guys in the draft, both defensive linemen and offensive linemen, which are both positions of need.
Yeah, but the Bears only have two more picks.
But there are all, like I said, there's a lot of free agents out there. The guys that are left are the guys who are, you know, 30, 31, 32 years old. They've been productive, but they are on the back end of their careers. And, you know, that's the kind of guys that you go out and you sign them on a one-year or maybe a two-year, with some upfront money so that you can do that. If you cut them at the end of, after 1 year, you can get them. But there's always competent offensive linemen, competent defensive tackles, people like that, who can come in and give you a good game. You know, an example might be, on offense, Connor Williams from Miami, who just so happens I did a little legwork on this, who only played 9 games last year, started them all, started 17 the year before, etc. So, you know, a starting offensive lineman who just happens to be 32 years old. Well, you can bring in guys like that. Mekhi Becton is another one from the Jets, who started all 16 games last year. Again, competent, you know, these are the guys you can do. And there's 3 or 4 of those, maybe 5 of those. And then if you go look at defensive players, there's some guys in their 30s. An example, Bud Dupree from Atlanta was a 6, you know, started last year every game. Fletcher Cox from Philadelphia, who's, you know, 33 years old. You can get guys like that, and so that your team doesn't suck next year.
Well, 2 things.
So that your positions don't suck next year. But they're not done building. They've come a long way from a couple of years ago when they were, you know, when they truly earned the number one pick in the draft. They've come a long way from that to the point where they are now, and they still have a couple of positions that at least need depth and really could use another really good starter.
Well, two things, Kevin.
Which may be next year's draft.
Two things on the Bears signed a guy, must have been, he had to be 10 to 15 years ago, was an offensive lineman, a guard. Big, I don't know where the hell I got him from. Big African-American dude, and he came from some team that had a salary cap problem, and they dumped him like 2 weeks before training camp, and the Bears got him. Hope they get like a year out of him. And they end up getting like 4 or 5 damn near all-pro years out of the guy, basically for a song. And they... The mentality right up to the Cheap Palaces or the McCaskies was offensive line, we never have to worry about these guys. We're just going to always pick somebody off the scrap heap, and it's going to work out like that. It hasn't worked out like that since. I mean, they got a couple guys that are okay. But here's my issue with the O-line stuff. As you see these guys go from 14 to 16 to 17 games, and granted, they draft a couple of exhibition games where nobody played. So you see your running backs, every team has 2 guys, maybe 3. You don't see the O.J. Simpsons, Walter Payton that are carrying the ball 30 times a game.
Yeah, very few. There's only a handful of those guys.
But I'm not even sure you'd want Walter Payton carrying the ball 30 times a game for 17 games, you know, type of thing. So, and you've got rotation at the wide receiver. You got rotation on the defensive line. The guys that you'd never rotate are your offensive line. And it's, you're right, it's very difficult to get depth there, but over a 14-year season, a lot of guys, 14-game season, I think a lot of guys played every play. I don't know that you can expect your offensive line to not have an injury or 2 or 3 over 17 games. And those guys play every single play.
And well, I don't think you can. I don't think you can in any position in football assume no injuries. So, and that's why I said they need depth. If they get another starter, then that is might relegate somebody to being a depth piece. That's okay. You know, that would be a Larry Borum or Tevin Jenkins has been excellent when he's played, but he's a guy who's had some injuries. So maybe he's a guy who gets bumped out of there. But you know, these are all guys they've drafted too. Larry Borum, Tevin Jenkins, Braxton Jones.
Tevin Jenkins is a first round pick.
Darnell Wright last year was terrific as their first round draft pick.
But Jenkins was a blown first pick, pretty much.
They overreached. Yeah. And that was previous regime, and everybody knew that when they drafted him, they had he had back trouble. So you know, it was a stupid pick. You don't choose damaged goods, which brings us to the Atlanta Falcons, who, first of all, they went and signed Kirk Cousins to big money for several years, and then what they do in the draft last night, they went and drafted Michael Penix, and so you know they drafted him so far ahead of where he was projected to go. They took him at the eighth pick. He's a guy who would have fallen maybe into the second round, but certainly would have been a late first rounder. So they draft another quarterback, and this just happens to be one who was in college 6 years because he had a bunch of injuries. He's terrific. He started in Indiana, and he transferred to Washington, and I think he's a really good player, but you know, they invested in him. They invested in that number 8 pick when they just signed, you know, spent tens of millions of dollars on a quarterback. And
the concept of having somebody play behind a guy for 2 years, that's worked spectacularly for a lot of teams. These other guys, they throw these guys in there. Sometimes you beat them up. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, that may work, but by the time he gets there, he's going to be like 27 years old.
That's an issue.
and still with questions about his durability. Not his fault that he's gotten injured. I'm not saying anything, you know, disparaging about him. Like I said, I really like the guy. I like the way he plays. But
he has surgical precision and throws with good anticipation. He's a top deep ball passer in the class, according to this guy.
Yeah, and he might be. He might be. But that's only if he can stand up.
Well, the thing you have to do, and we got to go to break here and talk about other stuff.
If he's not in the cast.
The thing you have to do is you have to figure out how good your guy is at this spot. And if not, you always kind of trade down. The perfect example of that is the Bears drafted fourth. I mean, the Bears are horrible at this. I mean, I'm not going with the fact that because the new guy's new, he's all of a sudden going to be a genius. Until proven guilt, until proven any otherwise, the only general manager he had who was any good was Jim Finks, in my mind. But anyway, you have to make a determination of how good these people are, Kevin, and you know, and there used to be a thing where, you know, all pro fresh first year, which is like really rare, starter first year, those kinds of things. And I remember the year the Bears picked Curtis Enos in the fourth spot. Mm-hmm. The top three picks, I forget who they were all world beaters. I think damn near they all were all pros and maybe the Hall of Fame. And then after that, there were probably 10, 15, 20 really good but all kind of equal ball players. And when you get to that spot, if you have the number one pick, like this guy, if he's that good, then yeah, you do it for him. But there's five other quarterbacks here. You know, could they have traded down, gotten one of these other guys who might be just as good, maybe better, and gotten somebody else too? I mean, the Bears only had four picks. They need like 10 people. So my point is,
they need people. And I get what you're saying, and they probably could have really fleeced somebody.
Which they did to get this pick.
Actually, you know, quite the trade when you think about it, because, you know, what did they do? They traded last year's number all one overall pick, and in return, they've gotten themselves DJ Moore, Darnell Wright, cornerback Tyreek Stevenson. I don't know if you paid much attention to him as a rookie last year, but he was pretty good.
Yeah.
Plus this year's plus Caleb Williams, plus fourth round pick this year and a second round pick next year. That's pretty darn good.
S&P futures up 37. NASDAQ futures up 179. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not...
Is your online trading career hit a double bottom with no one to talk strategies with? Are commissions eating up all your profits? You need help. You need PTIProDirect.com. Trade stocks for 1 cent a share, stock options for $1 a contract, all with a $1 minimum per trade for stock and options. That's right, $1, Chuck. And best of all, you get to talk to former option floor traders to fine-tune your trading game plan. So check it out at PTIProDirect.com. That's PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tamara Ricardo on the board. S&P futures up 37. NASDAQ futures up 181. Better than the days when we were down here. We're coming back pretty good this week. We look at some of the fundamentals and the market wants to go down, and then all of a sudden, you know, the buy the dippers come in and we go back the other way. We don't want to shed our thought that this, you know, the market's going to keep going in the future, and let's hope it does, for God's sake. Dow futures up 39. So individual stocks, I got Google up 19. That's 12%. That's a lot. They've been sliding. They've been considered being kind of behind everybody else in the AI and everything. And they reported yesterday that they're not. So everybody's happy today. Microsoft was down yesterday in anticipation of the numbers coming out. I don't know what people were thinking, but now whatever, they're okay today. So they're actually higher than they were before. Amazon up $5, $2.90. Although they did not have earnings, they think theirs are still coming up. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 146.8%, FTSE up 40.5%, CAC around up 30.4%, so bullish over there as well. Nikkei up 306.8%, 37,934. Still a waste of the 40,000 where it got to, but still, they've been real strong. Hang Seng up 366, that's 2%, 17,651. Shanghai up 35, 1.2%, so China's attempt to pour money into the system and pump the market up after kind of a shaky start has been doing pretty good lately. I don't know exactly how much money they've poured in. It's hard to find out those numbers. But yesterday, Dow was down 375, S&P down 23, NASDAQ down 100. So we're, except for the Dow, we're past that on the upside by quite a bit today. Bonds down 2 basis points, 4.68, but yesterday they went over 4.7. This is becoming danger areas for market valuation. Bund down 3 basis points, 2.59. Japan down 2.85. Oil up 60 cents, 84.17. It's creeping again into the mid-80s. Brent up 57 cents, 89.59. Trying to get to 90 bucks here, it looks like. Natural gas, wow. $1.56, down 8 cents. Talk to Greg Pappas on Monday. Find out some point here. Man, do you want to take a stab at this? It's really low. RBOB down 2 cents, 277, but then again, it could go lower. Gold up 18 bucks, 23.58, trying to come back to the 2400, which it briefly nailed last week. Silver up 22 cents, 27.58. It was over 28. Copper, another 5 cents, 457, the steadiest creep gain of all these metals here. We've got foreign exchange, 107 on the euro, and we've got 125 on the pound, pretty much steady. And we've got Bitcoin down 41, 64,152. Carter, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. Cubs win. I think Sox lose again.
Thank you, Chief. And you're right, actually. Top of the morning is actually right now 6:36 right here in Chicago. Beautiful morning. We got about 45 degrees Fahrenheit right now with a high of 58. Becoming cloudy, becoming breezy this afternoon with a couple of showers and a thunderstorm. There's about 68% probability for precipitation and 27% probability of thunderstorm. In Phoenix, we got 65 degrees, high of 81, and a 37% indoor humidity, which is the ideal humidity. Going over to traffic in Chicago right here, inbound Kennedy from Monroe is going to be 13 minutes. Inbound Eden from Lane Cook is 27 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Lane Cook. I'm sorry, inbound Eisenhower from Wolf is going to be 18 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th is 14 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan is going to be 19 minutes. On the sports, the Suns are playing the Timberwolves today at the Footprint Center in Phoenix at 9:30 p.m. So you better make sure you're setting up for that. The White Sox, as you said, Chief, lost to the Twins 3-6 in Minnesota. The Cubs beat the Astros, though, 3-1 right here in Chicago. And also, we got a couple of the games coming up today. The Cubs are playing the Red Sox today at 6:10 p.m. in Fenway Park in Boston. White Sox play the Rays in Chicago, and Diamondbacks are playing the Mariners in T-Mobile Park in Seattle. That's all I got for you, Chief.
We have Kevin, I sent you this. What?
They've played 25 games. They're 15 games out of first place.
That's
They've been shut out 8 times already.
My buddy at the Tripoli, Mr. Sports, Gino, tells me, what's the worst was, what, the 1988 Orioles? Were they like 1-20 or 1-20 something? They ended up
like
winning
22 now, I think.
They ended up winning 60 games. How'd they pull that off after that start?
I don't know. Teams didn't bother to show up. I don't know.
Kevin, we scratched the surface a month or so ago. We started talking. Greg started for us when he timed on the U.S. debt clock. He timed when he first started working with us, which had to be like a year ago. He timed the how long it took for $1 million to go into debt. And wasn't it like 43 seconds and then?
Something like that. Like
7 months later, he timed it and it was like 33 seconds. It was that much faster. And then we had a report by somebody, and we talk about this and time flies. A talk by somebody that if you actually look at the federal deficit, you can get the Treasury statement, and it's available online, and it's detailed. It'll tell you where every penny's going if you look. At the federal Treasury statement, and you look at the amount the debt is going up, they don't match up. That actually, the Treasury statement says that we're going to be, what, $1 trillion in the hole this year or something like that. And actually, if you look at the debt, we're piling on $1 trillion, what, every 7 or 8 months or something. I got to go back and get this accurate. On Wednesday, we'll actually get the numbers. But how it's piling up a lot faster than that because of stuff that, for some reason, they're not counting. And I can't figure out what they count and what they don't and who kind of makes that call. But there's an article here today by CNBC by Carlos Waters. There's an easy name to pronounce. Finally, Carlos Waters. And he's talking about why so many U.S. cities are in financial trouble. And he's talking about there's capital needs and blah, blah, blah. But he's talking about a city, New York. And you get to the point here, Kevin, where I think the whole, in my opinion, from an economic point of view, the entire political system breaks down when people lie to you about the numbers. Everybody else thinks I'm nuts on this. You know what? I probably am for a lot of reasons, but when you and I run for office and we run in a purest form, and we're not talking about stuff like abortions and all those other kinds of things, we run for office in a city or a state, hopefully we're running on our ability to manage and provide the services that the citizens need, like a mayor. I could tax you, $2 for every $1,000 your house is worth, and I can provide police, I can provide fire, I can provide, good roads, I can provide schools, I can provide all this stuff.
Yeah, you're talking about a platform called competence.
Yeah, and you come out and say, well, I can do the whole thing for $1.90. And maybe you can, because you're actually pretty good at this. And so all of a sudden, if I'm in office and I cannot count half the crap I'm doing, well, it kind of blows up the argument, doesn't it? Right? I mean, when we start talking about numbers like that, and all of a sudden all kinds of stuff isn't counted. We don't even know what it is that's not counted at a federal level. I mean, but now this has to do with the state level. It says the financial challenges within cities. And this is, you know, the COVID money's drying up for these places. Financial challenges within cities appear to be mounting despite high municipal credit ratings and robust demand for urban commodities like housing. For example, New York City had a total public debt of $177.6 billion at the end of 2022. Now, that's kind of a lot. According to researchers, blah, blah, blah. That translated to a per capita taxpayer burden of $61,000, according to the group's analysis. Now, what do we owe? Individually, we owe the federal government what? Every taxpayer owes $240. So now for New York, you got to add another $61. That's kind of a lot. The estimate comes in higher than the one quoted by New York City Comptroller Brad Lander, whoever the hell he is, who says the Big Apple has a public debt burden of roughly $96 billion, about $30 billion shy of the city's debt limit. Now, we're talking about almost double. The 177 versus the 96. I mean, it's not quite double, but it's pretty close. The discrepancy, according to Truth in Accounting, comes from pension debt obligations that are underreported and will eventually be pushed down to future taxpayers. If I don't pay that invoice, I don't have to include it in my balanced budget, says Sheila Weinberg, the group's founder and CEO. This was a trick. Remember, who's the lady who had been Democratic, I think, Kevin, I'm not an expert on New Jersey politics, but I think there have been a couple of Democrats that were governors in New Jersey for a while, and then, remember, was it Christine Todd Whitman that won, the Republican lady?
Might have been.
And she gets in and she's going to balance the budget, and she did in a year, and I'm thinking, wow. And all of a sudden I read this article, she went from accrual-based system to a cash-based system. Now, listeners, I think most know, but if not, I'll be a brief, well, I'm sure not Mr. Accounting, but if somebody sends me a bill, now in the securities business, everything we do has to be accrual-based, and we have to have a positive net lick. We have those kinds of SPTI securities. So if somebody sends my brother a bill for whatever furniture we bought for, say, $800, he has to accrue that bill.
Yeah, so, I mean, you owe the money, so you take the expense, whether you're sending the check this month or not.
Right. But however, and it's legitimate, you can also be a cash-based system. When I send the $800, it becomes an expense. Amazingly.
Well, actually, you can't, but you measure cash flow separately.
No, I'm saying that
there's an accounting. There are accounting principles that apply. So you really are supposed to book the expense when you pay it.
Illinois is cash based. Most
government does it all the time.
By the way, most doctors' offices, when they used to have doctors' offices and those kinds of places, they were all cash based.
Yeah, go look at their tax forms.
But I'm saying, but if you don't have, you know, kind of a regulator, or I think it's perfectly legal to have a cash based business. Anyway, but I'll ask Dan when he comes in. He's our CPA president.
It's not going to show up on your taxes that way.
Okay. I beg to differ, but let's find somebody who knows more about it. But the point being is that we have cities and states that are cash based. That's why Illinois will tell you, okay, we have a balanced budget. Although things are way better under Pritzker, I will say that. Now, whether he got the money from the governor or wherever he did, but the state is in way better financial shape than when he got there. Now, it could be totally outside, you know, anything he did right or whatever, but the fact is, it's a lot better. But there was a period of time, Kevin. Why do you think there's there's very, very few independent pharmacies in the state?
Because even though they book the revenue when they earn it, they still don't collect it, and so they have a cash flow problem.
Look,
those are two entirely different concepts. What do I always, because I teach this in class all the time, here's what matters. First of all, I had a finance professor when I was in grad school, and he used to reach into his pocket and pull out his money clip at least once every class and say, this is all that matters, because if you're out of cash, you're out of options. So you still report earnings are still measured the way they always were on an accrual basis. That's the way it is. But cash flow still matters, especially when interest rates are higher. It doesn't matter as much. You don't care as much when interest rates are zero. But cash flow matters, especially to a stressed business. So if you're worried about making your next payroll, but having enough cash to make your next payroll, you sure as hell aren't concerned about the accrual process. You're wondering where the cash is going to come from,
right?
And you manage to that.
Okay.
And I've known that because I've had to live in different. I've had to get capital expenditures through, and it matters whether your CFO and CEO care more about net income or cash flow or EBITDA. That's all I'm telling you.
Right.
That's what matters.
All right, I understand that. But a state or a city has the ability, and maybe they shouldn't. As a matter of fact, I'm right with you, they shouldn't. State of Illinois just would not pay a bill for the last 5 months of the fiscal year.
Lying sacks of crap would tell you that they were balanced.
And all of a sudden, the next fiscal year, you get all your checks. So the people who...
Early in the next fiscal year, but when they run out of cash again...
Yeah, then the same thing all over again.
Balance, then you get slow played at the end.
You get the whole thing. So what I'm saying is these numbers, if New York really has a $90 billion problem between these numbers, well, hell... Don't you think that should reflect somewhere? I mean, the difference, if you look at the Chicago situation, it's the same thing. If you actually totally play out the interest piece, or not the interest or the pension piece, it's way different than what they tell you it is. Matter of fact, let me go to the .org thing, which I promise never to do, but I will do. But I mean, as Kevin, if we can't believe the numbers, we don't even know where we're at, right?
Tom, they're lying to you, and here's where the real problem lies at the moment. So, should we have directed all kinds of COVID relief funds to the cities? No, that was but we did. So we'll stipulate that they had the money. So many of these cities and states burned through that money for anything but COVID relief. And anything but getting their own fiscal houses in order, which was a big opportunity for them. Okay, I've got this big thing of cash. There's nothing I can do with it that's going to do a damn thing about COVID. So now I'm gonna use it to, get my books restructured, get caught up on payments, get everything back in order. And they did anything but that too. So now the money's running out. They've applied the last of it. And they're sitting here stuck saying, okay, we're screwed again.
This guy from Chicago thought that money was absolutely his little pot to give it to whoever he damn well pleased.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
On a federal level, we have the...
Be a crime, by the way.
Yeah, it should be a crime.
The funds weren't designated for that.
Right, but these guys are above the law. It's federal budget deficit official, U.S. is 1.8. The budget deficit actual is 1.95. Well, that's, 8-9% difference is right there. Let's find a state debt clock here in Illinois. The in-state revenue is 126, and the spending is 190. Well, how the hell is that balanced, Kevin? We're not even close. I mean, are we?
No, Pritzker said it was all better.
Yeah.
Going to use that to run for president in 4 years.
I'll take him over to the guy in California. Just saying.
Yeah, well, great.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you got
what do you want to do? Have your arm cut off or your leg cut off?
Well, it's a choice, I guess. That's how I got. I used to go on as a guest. With Joan Esposito, and she has a show, and it's pretty, she's terrific, but it's a, I was not invited back one day when she started talking about how many people are doing fine in the economy and so forth, and how she doesn't have any debt, and I said, Joan, it doesn't surprise me, and you've had a, nice career, blah, blah, blah. I said, by the way, you do have some debt, and she goes, well, what are you talking about? I said, well, are you a taxpayer? And she says, well, yeah. And I said, by the way, your debt per taxpayer, U.S., is 266.951. And the comment was something about thanks for ruining my day or something along those lines. I was never invited.
You're no longer invited to ruin her day.
No, I'm no longer invited to ruin her day. But I mean, but when you had the COVID situation, Kevin, I mean, and these guys are dying. Guys, whoever was in office, was Trump at the time, but his response was almost exactly the same as those other guys who throw money at people. But your states and your cities can't print money, right? And most of them have some sort of a balanced budget directive, at least, if it's not a law, even though they somehow get around it by accounting tricks. So the only way you could get blood into the turnip was from the federal government, right? Because Chicago and Illinois and Indiana
can't print its own money, yeah.
They can't print their own money. So the only way you get... So you actually, if you...
Unless they get into Bitcoin.
Yeah, well, yeah. So the only real way to do it was that way. And to, if you know, when we talk about these numbers all the time and how horrible they are, but I think if you were to look at total debt over the last 5 years of every city, state, and federal, as much as the federal has gotten themselves totally screwed, I think some of the states, it's not all, that number is not as bad as it looks, because they have refloated a lot of the local and state. You know what I'm saying? If you look at the total indebtedness countrywide, it's gone up, but it's not going up as much as if you just look at the federal piece. That's a little bit of a peace pipe to whoever is doing this, but it's probably the only good thing I can see in the mess, Kevin. By the way, one of our listeners called and said, hey, you got to listen to the interview between Lawrence Holmes, who he used to play softball with on the score, who now has got himself a pretty nice career. Never was a huge fan, but decent enough sort, third baseman.
Seems like a little big guy.
Yeah, and so he interviews the mayor, which is great for Lawrence. I mean, it's a huge deal. And so this guy calls up and says, you got to listen to it. I tried to find it. Now, I probably just couldn't find it because I'm bad at it, but I think the score must have taken it off or something. Maybe they did. I mean,
no, it wasn't the score. I know what that was. It was like on the Comcast Sports Chicago.
Oh, okay. But I said the mayor came off as an absolute buffoon about numbers. Didn't know anything. This is going to work. He starts talking about putting high school graduations at this place. Kevin, I look at these numbers. I mean, you know, I'm pretty good at it. It's been my life, so I shouldn't criticize other people because they're better at their stuff that they do than I could ever do, probably. But we're talking about a $4.5 billion place. The last two places that have been built for that kind of money have two teams in it. And they're in way bigger cities than Chicago, L.A. and New York, right? They both have two football teams in there. So they have instead of 11 dates, including exhibition, they have 22. And I don't know if they're making any money or not. But so let's just say you put this thing up at $4.5 billion. The Bears right now, I think, are making, I could be wrong, but my estimate is something like $200 million a year. Somewhere between 180 and 210 is my guess. But again, I don't know the books. They're paying $6.5 million rent. Now, $200 million for a family is like a hell of a lot of dough. But even if you get, we talked about it a little bit with Dan Janinas yesterday, even if you get some sort of a state waiver to where it's your this money is, the interest is not taxable and so forth, and in other words, you get under the state umbrella for the Bears. Kevin, what 6% of $4.5 billion is what? $260 million a year in interest? You better have a lot of concerts, because how the hell can the Bears go from $6.5 million to 260? Plus, they only want to come up with half the money, but they want all the revenue from every other event in the place. I know the old acronym, if you don't ask, you don't get, but Kevin, why doesn't everybody just look at that and burst out laughing? Or either that or grab an air sickness.
I mean, I would, you know, kind of laugh in their face on that one. Yeah, that is the ultimate question that I think that I never hear anybody outside of this show ask is, what would the deal look like if the Bears were to pay a real rent? you know, a rent that represented what it should cost to have that stadium for their dates. Now, I realize they're putting some money into it, so that would be something of an offset. It's not like the city is building it 100% on their own, so that can be an offset. But, you know, what are they going to pay $6 million, $10 million, or should they be paying, you know, $30 million every year or something like that? I don't know what the number is that they should be paying, but I know it's bigger than what they're paying now.
Bigger than six, yeah.
So now let's ask the question again, what should, you know, what would the deal look like? You know, because it could probably be made into a good deal if you had the Bears paying a fair market value for rent, but they're not.
Well, there's no public transportation to the old place. There's going to be none to their new place unless you build, like, new railroad lines or something. And who the hell's going to do that? But the Bears allegedly are saying they're going to come up with $2.3 billion. From where, Kevin?
Oh, they're going to borrow it.
Okay. They're gonna want the state to borrow it for them. That's different.
No, they're gonna want a state guarantee on the rate, and so that they're backed, so that that'll get them a low rate.
Well, okay, but even so, what did Dan say? A state rate for something. Now that's not going to be a general obligation bond, right? So it's going
to be that's going to be separate. They want a bond issue from the stadium authority.
Okay, so what does the P&L look like on that? If I'm running an insurance company, by the way, running investments here at PTI, and what if I had some, you know, huge ass client that wanted a fixed income, what would possess me to put like $100 million of their money into that particular bond when I don't think the revenue comes close to matching the expenses? Why would I ever even think of doing that?
Just to be a nice guy.
Just because we like football?
Yeah, everybody does that. Everybody likes putting their money where they can just be nice guys.
Well, yeah, and now we have this issue. Suppose there is no stadium, there is no new stadium, and the Bears just walk. What exactly happens? I don't know if you listened to me with Dan yesterday. The current Soldier Field is with the Pyrenees Exposition Authority, right, or something, or whatever it is. I don't think they've paid down any of the debt. They paid interest, right? So they still owe $600 million. So the Bears leave. Now, the city now has a choice. Well, we can either get somebody else in there for a decent rent, maybe. I think Jacksonville would be here in a second, to be honest with you. But or somebody. If you were to say to one of those guys, you get to be in Chicago for $6.5 million a year, I'd say I'd pack my bags tomorrow. So they now is the city gonna pay for those bonds? Is the mayor gonna write that check? Because they can't do it.
And nobody knows to ask the mayor that question.
Yeah. Hey, so get a load of this before we let you go.
Again, they own the property. I'm still not saying they're not. They could still land in Arlington Heights. They own the Arlington Park property. You want to develop a property, go ahead and develop a property,
yep.
Build yourself the entertainment district like they've done in so many other places, build it out there, do it, and then you can actually, as the Bears, you can actually get a return from the property in addition to having your stadium.
Don't make the
public pay for it. Make the public pay for everything. If there's some infrastructure stuff that makes sense, cool, do it. But it's just ridiculous that we're pursuing this.
By the way, you almost lost the Chief last night. I mean, some people might cheer on that, but...
But I do. Did I miss?
No, but I missed.
Damn it, I missed.
No, but somebody barely missed. I went to see a client. I was on a Kennedy with nothing but traffic, right? All of a sudden, I see this huge commotion to my right. This huge bus. First, I see a state police car. He flies by. This bus almost takes out my front fender. And then there was an equipment truck, another bus, and a state police guy that couldn't have missed me by 6 inches. I'm sitting there, what the... I wasn't being nice with the language. Evidently, there two state police cars are giving the Cubs an escort to the airport through all the traffic where everybody else is stuck in. I tell you, I'm sitting there going...
The Cubs are damn lucky there weren't protesters out there shutting down the highway.
Tell me we need two state police when everybody's driving on the shoulder and we need two state police cars escorting the friggin' Cubs to the airport. What minor morons do we have running this place?
Well, but Tom, they just swept the Astros.
Well, that's true. That's true. And they called up Pete Crow Armstrong, so you know he was happy with that. So well,
he got his first major league hit, and it happened to land deep in the right field stand. So yeah. I was glad to see that.
Yeah. Hey. All right, bud. We didn't. the protests up at Northwestern. By the way, I didn't see any portal lets in those pictures.
Oh, thanks to Northwestern. You also saw Southern California's canceled graduation.
Well, nobody gets to graduate? They can't get a job?
Oh, no, just the ceremony. It's a capitulation. At first, they had protests against the speaker they had coming in, and then they've still got this ongoing threat of protests, so they canceled it. And on top of that, back up 4 years, we were canceling all these same people's high school graduations. So we're kind of screwed.
So that's
a conversation we should have next Wednesday, yeah. Because if you really want to change a society radically, the first thing you have to do is undermine all its ceremonies and its symbols and so on. And that's what we've been doing.
No caps, no gowns, eh? But what if we're in that business? We're really screwed.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't be entirely sad if we had to cancel ours.
Well, the last I heard, Northwestern, these guys are on the air. We got a dash here. Bitching and moaning about their investments. I don't know if they've changed, Kevin, but for a while, you know, back a while, I maybe don't know anymore. I think Northwestern used an indexed approach and just bought, you know, indexes, and instead of individual stocks. So, I think the people who are protesting don't even know what their investment strategy is, nor do they care, I guess.
Well, anyway, we're stealing Carl's
time. SP Futures up 37.
And I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, NASDAQ Futures up 172. We back. Real quick, Ricardo, let's get back with Carl. We got all kinds of stuff to talk about.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jock.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tomorrow. Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 36. NASDAQ is up 170. We're bouncing back from yesterday because we had good earnings today. We had the crummy earnings yesterday in Meta, which took it down quite a bit. It was down 20%, but it made it back to where it was down like 10 or 11. But now today, everybody loves Google and everybody loves Microsoft. Hey, Carl, how are you, bud?
No, I'm doing fine.
Help us out here, will you? When they talk about these different companies competing in this AI world, you know, the Microsofts and they claim they did real well in that area, and then you've got the Google, and you had Meta/Facebook telling you they lost $3 billion in their artificial environment, whatever those crazy glasses and stuff they had. Where exactly are these people? How does Google exactly compete against Microsoft in AI? I mean, it seems like they do kind of different things. Are they competing in one area in the same thing?
Well, everybody's kind of trying to find a way to use the buzzword and get a 20% boost in the stock price because they all lie, to be blunt. I mean, it's being nice about it, I suppose. And yet that's kind of what it is, because if you think about what they're really talking about, you know, Microsoft has Copilot, right, which is their little thing that you can turn on I have it all. I have all that stupid stuff shut off on all my Windows machines. First off, I don't want it consuming my processing time. Secondly, I'm about as interested in their curated view of what their AI wants to spew out as I am at examining the latest deposits that have been made by people walking their dog along the street. And that's the, you know, that's the real problem you have from a business and societal level with this stuff. But from an earnings point of view, I think the problem is much more profound than people are giving credit to, which is that none of these things are money-making elements. They're all loss-making elements. They're all costs, and not small ones either. You know, the power requirements to run these things are, you know, they stretch into the obscenity range very quickly. I'm, you know, you got it. It's kind of like tulip mania in a way, except it's worse. And that tulips, you know, took some fertilizer and some water and put them out in the sun, and it's all good. But I'll give you where there's an analog though that actually kind of does fit. Remember when they first started legalizing marijuana?
Oh yeah,
in the States. Oh, yeah. Every cannabis company on the planet shot the moon on their stock price, right? All of a sudden, there's this whole sector that heretofore didn't exist because, you know, the only people that grew weed before were hillbillies out in the backwoods somewhere, or some Mexicans, or you know, down wherever, or somebody running a clandestine grow house that was trying to avoid the power company, you know, dinging them and calling the cops because, hey, how come this house is running, you know, $1,500 a month power bills? Now all of a sudden, you know, then it becomes legal. Okay, fine. So now you've got all these companies that have these huge valuations. We're going to grow into it. Well, guess what? You can only smoke so much weed, right? And so...
Don't forget the gummies.
Well, and eat so many gummies, I suppose. Of course, you know, the delayed effects on those things can be a little bit of a problem if you're not ready for it.
Well, the brownies, same thing. Make sure you only eat one after an hour. They eat two, and all of a sudden they're messed up for like a week.
Oh yeah, no. The stories on that are all good. They're all funny, but you know, not if you were the one that was the brunt of the joke. So. But that's kind of the problem. Is it's the same sort of thing, okay? So, and then you look at companies like Tesla, okay, which just came out with their report.
And all the guy did was say we're gonna have cheaper cars a year and a half from now, and everybody loves the guy again, even though they.
He said a bunch of other things too. Okay, first off, remember that in 2019 he said we were gonna have 1 million. Robotaxis, Teslas, on the road in 1 year.
Yeah.
Okay. This was an official statement made by Elon. Well, stock got a huge crank off that for obvious reasons. There are no robotaxis. It's 5 years later. All right. That sort of thing has been... But there were some other things that were interesting, too. One of the other things that he said, and he alluded, he didn't directly say he alluded to it, is that he's going to find a way to farm the CPU power that your car is not using, presumably when it's parked, and sell it, make money from it. Well, wait a minute. It's not his car. It's your car.
Well,
so this is kind of like
the guy has a million ideas. I got to give him that, but boy, oh boy.
Well, I mean that one is outright theft,
yeah.
Right? I mean that's your property, and
he'll split it with you. He'll split it with you.
Yeah, sure he will. You know, you'll get 5 cents, and he'll get the 95, right? I mean it's, but this is the kind of nonsense that goes on in all bubbles, Chief, and you know it's the same garbage that was going on when the internet was happening.
Well, and Kevin, how long has you've been on show for? Kevin, well, you and Kevin, but Kevin used to actually go buy extra when he was at Better World Books. Every year he'd go out when they were busy. He'd buy extra computing capacity, which essentially is the cloud, right?
Right.
And while this thing was still a craze, he'd come out every couple of weeks and you'd agree with him and say, it's becoming a commodity. There's all kinds of people selling this stuff. He goes, obviously, if Amazon, if you're selling your stuff through Amazon, they're already in the door. They have a leg up on the next guy, but still, it's just a leg up. I mean, he goes, it's been there for a while. I mean, he was saying the thing became a commodity 2 years before now. You don't hear the cloud spoken once on TV all day long.
No, you don't. And, you know, it's a little bit of a problem, right? But this is the thing that happens. Commoditization is real, okay? And every time it happens, the end result is prices come down, capability goes up, and that ultimately always hits your margins. Always.
The only people getting around that are your drug companies, because somehow, even though other people in a lot of cases develop the drug, they get these ironclad patents for like damn near 20 years.
Well, that's because we don't throw anybody in jail.
Right.
Ever. Okay, even though they're breaking the law, laws that have been on books for 100 years, even though it's a felony, it's civil.
But we also grant patents.
Well, okay, and again, we let them break the law, okay, because you take a... And by the way, I'll just... one of the most egregious examples, which is absolutely obscene, and a huge number of people should be in prison for it, was the original asthma inhalers. Okay?
Okay.
Which, you know, kids used to walk around with it before you couldn't have your, you know, your inhaler in your own pocket. You had to leave it with the school nurse, right?
Yeah.
All right. But, you know, kids used to have these things all the time because, you know, hey, listen, if you get triggered, you know, you've got some kind of an allergen, sets it off, you got a real problem. You need that thing right now.
Well, breathing's kind of key.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, being able to actually draw breath is a big deal, right? So, anyway, these things were dirt cheap, but they used the same refrigerant that your house refrigerator had R22 in them. And the reason is that the stuff is in the body inert. It's not poisonous. It doesn't do anything terrible, and it's a propellant. It's a delivery mechanism to get the drug your throat.
Not Denver. What was the first refrigerant that actually was bad for you? There was one before that.
Ammonia was one of the first.
No, ones. I mean, the stuff in your car you can't use anymore. Way back in the day, whatever the stuff was.
Oh, no, there was nothing. There's nothing wrong with that. Stuff's R21. But that was banned, too, because it's a greenhouse gas.
Well, is that the stuff that beats up the ozone or something?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it beats up the ozone. Okay, so does R22.
Okay.
Okay. Yes, it beats up the ozone, but, by the way, it also keeps you from being dead.
Yeah, well, that's key.
Well, you know, right. So, you know, there's a trade-off to all things, right? So the drug companies actually went to the government and got the government to ban their product because it had this propellant in it. All right? So not just use in air conditioners, but use at all, including in medications. They actually lobbied for the ban. Why? Because then they changed the propellant and went back and got a new patent. Now, here's the scam. The drug didn't change. Now, people should have gone to prison for this.
Sort of like the EpiPen. The stuff didn't change. They put a new cap on it, right?
Well, but this is even more. Yeah. Well, yeah, but the cap was in fact different because it made it, you know, that actually changed the functionality. That you didn't have to know anything. You just stabbed somebody with it, right? This was a situation where literally nothing in terms of the active way that the product worked or the active ingredient, none of that changed. The only thing that changed was the inert gas that blew it into your lungs.
Well, when Katie was in, remember... couple times, and she's doing research in a lot of this medical stuff, well, some of it, young lady, and she was a terrific guest, and she said that at these hospitals where she was working, Vanderbilt, and she was Northwestern, she was Minnesota, she went to a few places, that a lot of people donate lots of money for some of this stuff. Sometimes the guy doing the research will get it from private people, sometimes he'll get it from the government, whatever, and there's a separate accounting, like for every one of these research projects. Plus, there's people like her working on it, and there's some doctors working on it, and who else? I mean, all of a sudden, you come up with something that's good. magically some drug company who wasn't even there ends up with the patent, and she doesn't get any money.
Right.
If a guy like you donated the money where the research was done, you don't get a piece of it. The hospital maybe gets a piece of it. I don't know if they even do or not. That's pretty skunky.
Oh, there's also, you know, this sort of stuff is all over the place, okay? And and the irony of it is that just yesterday at the Supreme Court, Trump's case on presidential immunity was heard, okay? I'm the president of the United States, therefore I'm immune from criminal prosecution. Well, all right, so here's the question that wasn't asked. I listened to the arguments because I was wondering if from either side of the aisle we'd have one of the justices pipe up and say, excuse me, I have a question. And the question is this: why are we here? Why are both sides of this, both the government and Trump's people, why are, Trump, of course, was in court in New York because he's under indictment in a criminal case and he has to show up for the trial, otherwise he'll go to jail. So he wasn't physically present for these arguments, but his counsel was. And the question is, why are we here in the first place when 20% of the U.S. economy rests on conduct that was criminalized 100 years ago in 15 United States Code, and which this court has twice ruled unlawful 40 years ago, okay? And yet not one indictment has been issued. And further, over the last several administrations, including both the petitioner and the responding side, both Trump and Biden, willfully and intentionally refused to bring millions of felony criminal charges under 8 U.S.C. 1324 related to...
Well, nobody has. Reagan didn't, Obama didn't.
But remember, the court's supposed to only deal with the people standing before it, right? The case in question. Okay, so in the case in question, both of these, both the respondent and the petitioner, willingly, wantonly, and with deliberate intent, in millions of individual cases, refused to bring these felony criminal charges. Now, all of a sudden, what you want us as the justices of the Supreme Court to say is that it's perfectly okay with one of two things. It's perfectly okay for the President of the United States to violate criminal laws in the context of his or her official duties. That's fine. The other side says, oh, no, that's political persecution.
Yeah.
All right. And yet, for the last 50 years, these laws have been used as tools of either political persecution or they're used as a cudgel to beat politically disfavored people and firms over the head with, and everybody else gets to break them as long as they make the correct campaign donations, right? All right. So, this is the crux of the issue. And when you look at all of the things that are going on, I mean, you know, you guys were talking about the pension obligations and all this and that and the other thing. I know a little bit about the accounting rules because we were bumping up against them when I was running MCS. Now, as it turns out, the limits have been changed, but in the context of...
Yeah, but it appears the ERISA laws do not count for government.
Well, they do, but nobody ever goes to jail.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, here's the thing. Now, it has since been changed. I don't know exactly when it changed because I went looking it up while you were talking. If you have $25 million in revenue over 3 years, you must use accrual accounting, three-year average. All right. Used to be $5 million for C-Corps. All right. You cannot switch back and forth between them. Now, MCS was in the window where we were eventually going to have to do this because we exceeded that $5 million revenue number. And so, you know, we were prior running on cash accounting. And in some cases, cash accounting is better for you. In some cases, accrual is better for you. I mean, it all works out the same in the end, but in terms of when you have to pay the taxes now,
yeah,
one could have a substantial difference in, you know, the size of your bill today. It won't change the total amount of money you have to pay over time, but it can have a cash flow impact that's fairly substantial in the context of right now. So, but the thing is, what you can't do is switch back and forth and game it. Once you make the election to go from cash to accrual, you can't go back. All right, so what you can't
do... I think Kevin was wrong. I think a cash system is perfectly legal.
It is in certain cases. But
It's not in others. And when you and that $25 million limit, you tell me a city that isn't over it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know every it used to be. Now they got these big organizations that run doctors, but it used to be no doctor's office ever considered revenue until you got the check.
Well, but the limit from an IRS perspective is $5
million. Okay.
Used to be. Okay, now it's 25, but it used to be 5. Okay. Now it was a 3-year look back. All right. So, you know, so once you crossed it, you didn't have to change instantly. All right. But if you stayed on the north side of that for 3 years, yeah, you did have to. That's the rules.
All right. Well, hey, I got a question for you. We've talked quite a bit. I mean, as time goes by, I mean, you see things about the Constitution, and, you know, I'm not any kind of a constitutional scholar or anything, but I will say that out of all the places in the world, it's probably one of the most amazing documents that's ever been put together, because it was designed by people who, let's say, were not perfect and knew everybody else wasn't perfect either. Hence the system of checks and balances. But I'm kind of stunned that the Supreme Court, now for those that don't know, I'm sure, but it's Congress makes the laws, the Supreme Court interprets the laws, and the executive branch enforces the laws, correct? Isn't that the basics of it?
Well, when they feel like it,
well,
yeah,
that's what I'm saying, but my point comes down to now, as time has gone on, and the Supreme Court says, no, this is absolutely what you have to do, this is what Congress meant, there doesn't seem to be any connection whatsoever. The idea that the Supreme Court has zero enforcement of even something they said like the day before, or even is encouraged to write a letter to the executive branch saying, hey, bleeps, we just said that this is, you know, the law of the land, and you seem to be, yet it goes back, I mean,
back to Jackson.
Well, I started paying a lot of attention during the Vietnam era, obviously, when people were ready to go get shot. But I mean, and Ronald Reagan for 8 years just said, well, we're not doing antitrust. Oh, okay. Now, whether he ended up doing less of it than other people, I don't know. But I know his attitude was, we're just not doing it. Okay, well, that's fine, I guess. But I mean,
no, it's not fine.
Well, I know. I know, but I'm saying, but now all of a sudden, there doesn't seem to be any redress for this. Now, is this a weakness in the document, or just people being people, or what is it? Can it be fixed?
Well, no, Chief. Here's the reality, okay? The Supreme Court does not have the authority in the Constitution to determine whether a law is constitutional. They don't.
I think they sort of do, but...
No, they don't. It's not there. Go ahead and look it up.
But they can... That language is not there, but if...
No, they arrogated it to themselves in Marbury v. Madison.
Okay, I guess what I'm saying is there are things in the Constitution... You know, especially with the Bill of Rights.
There's nothing that implies it.
Okay, but including the Bill of Rights, that if somebody were to pass a law saying, by the way, we can muzzle everybody, I think they can say, wait a minute, that doesn't match up with the First Amendment.
No. The arbiter of these things is the people, and the enforcement mechanism is the Second Amendment. And you may not like that, I may not like that, but it's fact, because the reality, just take a look at what's happened in the last, I mean, it's not the first time, like I said, it goes all the way back to Jackson, okay? You know, the only infringement upon the rights that are reserved to the people, and therefore, you know, the things that are defined in the Second Amendment, or in the other amendments, all of them, all right? Warrantless searches under the Fourth Amendment, right? Which, by the way, was just extended again under FISA, Section 702. The only enforcement mechanism is the people, because the Supreme Court doesn't have a military, doesn't have a police force, doesn't have the ability to bring original charges. They cannot prosecute. The only people who can prosecute the executive. The executive is charged with prosecuting, and every one of those people in the executive and every other government official takes an oath to faithfully discharge and uphold the laws.
Yeah, well,
we know how much toilet paper that is worth, right?
Yep.
So, what is the check and balance on this? Because the Supreme Court
said
that Biden's
giveaway transferring student loan debt to the American taxpayer was unconstitutional. It was not founded in the statutes. Congress had not given him the power to do it, and that decision's void. And he's been doing it since for the last 3 years.
I would agree. I would say this, though. Part of what, and I'm not one of these guys that likes the workaround stuff, because we have a bunch of other better stuff to talk about here, because I want to talk about this GDP report yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, that was a good one, too.
But somewhere along the line, the executive branch, their people, Congress does the law here, all right? And they come out with, you know, there's going to be student loans, whatever. Other people take it from there, and they take care of the interest rates. They take care of all the other stuff. They take care of the administration piece of it. It may not even come close to what the law actually said in the first place, which we've had to deal with for a long time, you and I, and anybody who's over the age of 12. I think it would be very possible, if they think it has worked out in an unfair way, which I believe it has, to go back and say, okay, we're going to rebate everybody 3% of interest because we charged too much. It wasn't in the bill. And by the way, if you paid your loan off 3 years ago, you're going to get a check. Or if you make it even for people. I mean, the whole idea, I mean, Carl, what is the intelligence? I mean, I went to, everybody knows, Kevin and I went to the University of Notre Dame. It's charged a lot of money now.
Right.
Now, if yet we're trying to get rid of all these loans to people who went to these, quote, for-profit institutions. What is the difference between somebody who spent $160,000 at Notre Dame and quit after 2 years, or went to a for-profit institution and quit after 2 years? What the hell is the difference? Notre Dame's they're making, but they don't have a, quote, profit, but they're sure as hell making dough, or there's money
well,
there.
Well, yeah, and that's one of the problems, right, is that the beneficiaries, if you will, of this are these allegedly nonprofit colleges.
Right.
Right. That have, you know, multiplied their tuition and fees by 10 times. They've got 10 times as many people working for them, but only 5% more professors.
Right.
All the rest are telling you which pronouns you can use.
But I got to, one real quick, because we got to go to break, but in 2 minutes, we start talking about things like the patent laws. And I have an odd view of this, Carl, because when I was at Notre Dame, I have no idea what the educations there are like, but we had some pretty interesting people that used to teach. And one of the dudes that taught was a guy named Father Fitzgerald. I think, God, the guy was, well, whatever age you are, 10 years older is older. But he was an older dude when I was in college. I'm going to say he was 60s. I said, you know, which is not old, but I think the guy just died. He made it to like 107 or 106. But he was a big arbitrator, big mediator. And he talked about the patent laws and how some of the biggest patents there were all fake. And then, you know, Brown Camera, Kodak stole that patent, right?
Right.
I mean, Alexander Graham Bell probably didn't invent the telephone. I mean, the list is sort of endless to the point where you really wonder, but yet if you ask any American, should there be patent laws, they're going to say, well, yeah, if I invent something, I should get the right to use it, like, for a while. Yet, if you look at the entire history of this law, and you look at the who gets to steal it, who gets the stuff, how many times it even works, how people have just stockpiled a gazillion patents, and if you and I ever come up with anything, we're going to get sued because it matches something else that nobody's even used for 20 years. I mean,
right.
At the end of the day, I've felt since then we should just scrub the whole thing.
Well, it's a complicated question, and one of the realities is that wherever you have humans, you have corruption, right? I mean, that's not new, but we've institutionalized it to a degree that is utterly obscene.
Yep.
And every year it gets worse. And, you know, it's for all the people that say, well, you know, just vote this way or that way and it'll fix it. Well, you tell me how many people went to prison under 8 U.S.C. 1324, or how many people got prosecuted under 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1 when Trump was in office? Because the answer in both cases is zero.
All right, Kyle, we got to dash this. I'm looking at this PCE inflation number. I haven't even seen it yet.
We gotta talk about that.
Because how
could
this be so much different than the deflator that just came out 2 days ago? We'll be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Support the Stocks and Jocks team. Hats, t-shirts, sweatshirts, jackets, and Chief's favorite, the Stocks and Jocks ladies thong, all available at our online store. Just go to stocksandjocks.com and click the link to order any amount of great Stocks and Jocks merchandise for yourself and any other Stocks and Jocks listener in your life. The prices are affordable and the selection is out of the park. The Stocks and Jocks online store at stocksandjocks.com.
Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 49. NASDAQ is up 205. We've got this PCE number coming out here, which, whatever. It's the most laughable number on earth because nobody even knows what the detail is. It's what the Fed looks at. Evidently, they're the only ones that can see. Anyway, Dow up 53. You know, these numbers are bouncing around here, so we'll talk about them in a little bit. Main ones are oil is up 61 cents, 84.18. We've got gold up 12.20, 13.54. And we've got, we've got green numbers over in Europe. Half a percent across the board, basically. We got green numbers over in Asia. That's good enough. Ricardo, what do you got for us? Trevi Weather Sports.
Good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:33 a.m. right here in Chicago. We got 45 degrees Fahrenheit right now, high of 58. Wind gusts at 30 miles per hour, becoming cloudy, becoming breezy this afternoon with a couple of showers and a thunderstorm. 68% probability of precipitation and 27% probability of thunderstorm. In Phoenix, we got 64 degrees Fahrenheit right now and a high of 81. 43% humidity and 37% indoor humidity, ideal humidity. On the traffic in Chicago, we got inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 23 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 45 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 32 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 21 minutes. Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, it's going to be 29 minutes. On the sports, today in the NBA, the Suns are playing the Timberwolves at the Footprint Center in Phoenix, Arizona, today at 9:30 p.m. We got the MLB White Sox lost to the Twins 3-6 in Minnesota. The Cubs beat the Astros, though, 3-1 right here in Chicago. The Cubs are also playing the Red Sox today at 6:10 p.m. in Fenway Park in Boston, Massachusetts. The White Sox are playing the Rays right here in Chicago, and the Diamondbacks are playing the Mariners in T-Mobile Park right in Seattle. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Carl, if we had the lovely Angelica on the board instead of Ricardo. Ricardo's doing a good job. Do you think on the Sox she would have given us one of her favorites? Who cares? All they do is lose by now.
Well, you know, for a number of years I lived in stumbling distance from Wrigley. Okay, so you know, going to the ballpark, getting good and loaded while watching the game did not require that I break any laws to get home. I still call them the Flubs, and the Double A affiliate is now 5 minutes from my house. So
You go. Do you go to any games? Those are fun to go to.
Oh, all the time. And actually, about a week ago, I went to one, and the Smokies won with a walk-off homer in extra innings.
Oh, there you go.
With two outs.
How much are beers at the minor league park? I guess they're 13 at the Cubs.
Oh no, it's great. Now the beers have gone up. Last year they were $5-6. Now they're like 7 or 8. But they are 20-ounce beers.
Okay.
So at least they're honest-sized beers, right? They're not, cut-down cup sizes or whatever. But a ticket right behind home plate, about two rows back, just off the right-hand side so that I'm not being blocked by the ump and the catcher. I can actually see the ball come across the plate. $13.
Wow.
It's great baseball. It's, it's just great baseball. So, yeah. I mean, okay. Whatever, but $5 to park your car.
That's not a bad
idea. How do you argue with this? Right.
All right, so we've got a million numbers. We've got a lot of numbers that have come out.
PCE just popped out at 2.8.
Yeah.
which is good for another little little pop in the futures, which I don't quite understand, because that's...
Well, now we've come back down. Now we're only up 43. We were up 58.
Well, it was. I mean, that was well above 2%, though, isn't it? Isn't 2.8 much higher?
Well, plus nobody knows. How do you have an index where you can't? Nobody even knows what's in it.
Oh well, you know, this is the magic of having black box numbers, just like the employment number. You know, we got this birth death model that the BLS will not tell you exactly how they come up with it. Right? There's no published. I can't go take their model and their data set and reproduce what they have, right? So this is just this. By the way, is the same sort of thing that pharmaceutical companies do all the time. You should take that statin,
Carol. What part don't you get? Nobody gets to see the wizard. Not now. Not ever.
Just do what we tell you, and everything will be all fine. Right? That's the way it always works. But you know, we have the GDP.
Yeah, I've never gone through that whole report as much as I did sort of yesterday, but it's. It's pretty interesting, and I was first thing I did was they come out and they say it was 1.6 versus the 3.something last quarter last year. I immediately dove in there to find the simple formula is you basically take the total goods and services, then you have what they call a deflator, an inflation gauge that says okay, if everything's up 5% but the prices are up 5%, you didn't gain anything. You're back.
It's a zero. That's right.
So. I'm stunned that the price deflator increased from 1.8% to 3.1%, and even on if you get rid of food and energy, it's like 3.7%. I mean, I can't believe they did that.
This is the basic problem. But if you look at the real GDP numbers, of course there was the huge dislocation that came, in 2020, right? From COVID. And the shutdowns.
In my opinion, again, one man's, it's been being screwed up since 2000, and surely by 2008, where if the growth has been, what, 1.5 or 2, and if you put a 3% inflation on there, which we had the whole way, I don't know if we were ever positive.
No, I used to do a quarterly report off the Fed Z1, which essentially took all that back out, right? And if you looked at it from that perspective, all the way back from the 2000 crash, the real GDP in real terms, adjusted for debt at creation, which is the right way to look at it, has been negative.
Yeah,
that's the impact on the common person. Okay, that's not it doesn't mean some people don't make out like bandits. Of course they do. That's always the case, but. That's the number, that's the reality. Of course, government's never going to report it that way, but you have to adjust for that because, credit emission's credit emission. Nobody did anything. You didn't dig anything out of the ground or make a house or, build a car or whatever in order to get any of that. You just pushed a button. So, yeah, that's absolutely the case. But interestingly enough, this last GDP report points out that So the basis for the monstrous rally that we had in the market in the last couple of months of 2023 and into the first couple months of 2024 was found in those two GDP numbers from quarter three and quarter four of 2023. Of course, the quarter three number comes out in quarter four, right?
Yeah.
That's roughly when the rallies really took off. And it was a marked acceleration. And now we are back to the trend from all the way back from 2022, the end of the last two quarters of 2022, which is a downward sloping line. And what it looks like now is that entire spike that we saw in the last two quarters of last year was nothing other than a pull forward. That people were accelerating things to get in front of the inflationary impact. All right, and the problem is that when you look at where this came from, I'll just read this. The increase in consumer spending reflected an increase in services that was partly offset by a decrease in goods. Within services, the increase primarily reflected increases in healthcare and financial services and insurance.
Yep.
Those are not discretionary spends. Okay, healthcare and
Healthcare is becoming discretionary for a real lot of people, Carl.
Well, healthcare is going to become death for an awful lot of people. Yeah, well, that's the rate this is going.
I didn't go as far as you, but yes, that's where it ends up.
Well, that's where it's going to end up, and it's already getting there. And then in the insurance problem is going to end up compounding into this. And what the GDP report tells us is that that spend increase is coming at the expense of everything else, okay, including goods. Now, that's a problem because that basically says, hey, guess what? The credit spigot is dry. There's no more water coming out of the faucet. And therefore, now consumers are having to trade off one thing for another. And you have to have car insurance or you get, unless you're an illegal immigrant, because if you're a U.S. citizen and you have a driver's license and you don't buy it, they suspend your license. And then when you get caught, you know, speeding or whatever, you go to jail.
No, you don't.
Well, not in some places you don't. But then you wonder why your uninsured motorist premium is higher than your liability like it is in Florida and some other places. Well, gee, I wonder what happened. you know, and your property damage coverage shoots the moon for the same reason, because the other guy's driving a car that has a $2,000 headlight. So if you bump him, all of a sudden it's a $5,000
collision. Well, that's where it's coming from. It's coming from both. But just an anecdotal, and this happens, I mean, I consider the both of us, even though we're probably odd ducks in a lot of people's estimation, regular people. My truck I just bought, it's not a new truck at all. And I had an issue with the anti-lock brakes.
Yeah, with the ABS.
And so... The mechanic calls the dealer. Well, they don't really make them anymore. Okay, well, I did find one at a place, at one of the dealers. And this thing is a printed circuit unit, you know, with...
Right.
It's not the pump. The pump is where all the brake lines go in, where
it's
the
hydraulic... It's a controller, right.
It's a controller. Guess how much?
Oh. I'm sitting down. Go ahead and tell me.
$1,100.
I believe it.
But no, and you know, really...
Well, oh, it's better than that. Some of those newer ones. So General Motors did a very kind thing to people. So the fuel pump on the older vehicles is just a pump, right? It's all it is. It's gated from the PCM because you don't want it running if the car stops for some reason. You get in a wreck, you don't want to spray gas all over the place. That's bad. So it checks the oil pressure before, you know, obviously there's an override when the key's in start. But that's it. It's just a relay. The newer GMs, there's a module that modulates the pressure. There's no bleed back into the tank to control the pressure and the fuel delivery. Instead, there's a little computer that does this, that modulates how fast the pump runs. Okay, fine. Except GM, in their infinite wisdom, put it in a place that gets covered by salt spray and road spray, gets damaged. The thing's expensive as blankety-blank. And on top of that, you can't just go get one out of a junkyard and plug it in because it has to be coded to match the VIN number
right.
of the car.
Oh yeah, well this would have had to have been coded too.
So all of a sudden we've got, you know, hey, you get wallet raped when this thing pukes, and General Motors was kind enough to put it in a place that's kind of likely to have that happen. And it's probably the same deal with your ABS pump.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, not only did they put it somewhere where it was easily damaged and did a semi-poor job of sealing it so it wouldn't happen, but on top of that, you get wallet raped because it's got to be coded. You can't just take one out of a car in a junkyard and plug it in. It won't work.
Well, I told you my alignment story, didn't I?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody... Who's ever driven vehicles? I mean, maybe young people, because you don't. If you want to check your alignment, you go down a smooth street at 30 miles an hour, and you take your hand off, take your hands off
the
wheel.
See if it pulls. Right.
See if it pulls, or you do a minor brake stop, and it would pull. Now, granted, and you're supposed to get it checked every year or so, which is no big deal. It's $50 or something, where they check the whole thing, or it used to be, and
no more.
And you don't need 6 sensors. All they're going to do is screw up. And by the way, when that car gets old, you don't want those things. But Carl, these numbers, I keep two things. I can't believe I did that stuff, research on 1980 versus today. I see now today it's actually back a little bit, but yesterday we went over 4.7 on the 10-year. And I can't get over the fact that it was almost 2 years back in the 80s when interest rates started to go down before the people who were in the in the investment community, I won't say the market because nobody was, well, not nobody, but virtually nobody, how much the interest rates had to fall and the market actually rally before people decided, hey, maybe going forward we want to be investors in the market, not just in fixed income. But it was a solid 18 months to 2 years before, after the interest rates started going down and the market eventually, before the market started going up, and it was even way after that before people, you know, got on board. Now this time, we're talking almost 2 years since these rates have gone up. I'm not talking about just the short term, but the long term. The market is up in the meantime. As a matter of fact, the research I did, which I never thought I'd find, Carl, the market from 1981 to August of 82, we actually had, the market was down like 20% as interest rates were starting to come down. And now here, we have interest rates that are starting to go up for the last 2 years and going up significantly. The market's actually up. It's the exact mirror image.
I know. And I look at, you look at this and as I've pointed out several times, this inversion between the 10-year and the 13-week, this is historic in terms of the, you know, the length of time this has gone on. Okay, I mean, this just, the only time that, you know, did we see stuff like this before for, you know, short periods where it's, you know, it dips down and then it comes up? Well, yes, we did, actually. If you look at 2019, there was, you know, there was an indication that there was going to be economic trouble. And then, of course, in 2020, you know, we had the huge distortion that came out of, you know, out of COVID. But prior to that, this kind of an inversion, the time that you saw it was nowhere near as severe, not even close. And that was in 2007.
Yeah.
Okay, the end of 06.
Well, that was more of a panic sort of situation than dinner.
Remember, this was at the end of 06. So this is when, you know, happy days are here. Everything's going to be fine. Subprimes contained all, you know, through the first part of 07. And then it uninverted in the, you know, in the back half of 07. And, of course, we know what happened in 08, right?
Yeah.
And the only time that there has been anything that looks, and it's not even as long. I mean, it's, you know, it's a 6-month period, was in the back half of 2000, which was, by the way, after the crash. Okay. So the thing is that, I mean, you'd look at this and you go, wait a minute, that should have come, you know, where's the beef, so to speak, right? And yet here we are, looking at this situation. It is this curve has been in an inverted state since October of 22.
Yeah, plenty of warning. And the weird part, I'm not. First of all, I don't give investment advice to somebody who's not a client, because you're not supposed to do that, and B, I wouldn't. But it seems to me that when you see this happening, and people were driven. I mean, I you know, to be perfectly blunt, Carl, I lost clients along the way because people 75, 80 years old were being talked into being all in, you know,
right.
Essentially they're 100% in the market, where you would never, you know, again, everybody's different, but you would never normally, if you went to any place, Merrill Lynch, you know, Fisher Investments, you name it, if you said, I'm 80, by the way, I'm never going to work a day in my life. If you did that 20 years ago, you would never be 100% in a, you know, a high tech fund or something.
I mean, oh, absolutely.
Not even close. So, and while I'm trying to, the last few people I've met with, clients, I'm like, all I'm really saying is, in your position, maybe we should be, you know, 20% in some of these T-bills, which seem to be higher than anything else. Maybe another 20% if we can find a guy like Dan to find some shorter-term munis or something that pay off pretty good. But by the way, in a year or two, even if we're wrong, we get the money back. And maybe the rest of the stuff, let's at least protect it a little bit. God, Carl, you swear I'm talking to my dog Scruff. I mean, it's like,
you know, I look at this in the current environment, and with the length that this dislocation in the rate structure has gone on, and the fact that the market has completely ignored it, okay, and it's rallied hard into the face of it.
Same thing. Same thing in '82 when it was coming down, it completely ignored it.
You know what? I really sort of like the idea of making 5.25, sitting in the short end of the curve, or even 5 if I just do it through a money market fund that's all treasuries. Okay, no yeah. gimmicks, no commercial paper, no leverage, no, because you can. You know, you could be, well, I don't like the idea of paying that guy, 30 basis points. Well, guess what? The reason you do it is because you have daily liquidity, and it's all in the short end of the treasury curve, and there's no games. There's no commercial paper. There's no leverage. There's no option.
Well, we can offer you a T-bill in 10 minutes if you want us to.
Well, I understand that, yeah. But then I got it. But the thing is that, if I buy a four-week bill, in order to avoid any risk of principal, I have to hold it for the 4 weeks, right? Now, most of
it's going to go up every day.
I understand that. Yeah. Or a 13-week bill or whatever, right? But my cash is locked up for the 13 weeks or whatever it is. Okay, fine. If you want daily liquidity, then, you've got funds from all the major brokerages. Yeah, they'll take 30 basis points off the top, but you get the same thing with the daily liquidity, okay?
I'm going to say it.
I like that.
I don't do our prices, Carl, but I don't usually give a shameless plug for PTI. If you had my brother go to the auction for you last week with $100,000, and all of a sudden today you said, "Man, I want to buy Tesla down here. I want my $100,000." Right. I'm saying first of all, you can borrow 90-some% against the thing.
Oh, absolutely.
And secondly, I bet he gets you out of the thing for $40.
Yeah, and so I mean, it's not. All I'm saying is that the average schlub, okay, who doesn't have a large account. They're sitting in Schwab or Fidelity or somewhere like that, right? This is a trivially easy thing to grab a 5% return, all right, on your free cash, all right, and at zero risk. Now you got to pay federal income tax on that, but no state tax.
It's kind of weird. These guys, we have two brokerage arrangements. I'm sorry if I'm pushing our stuff a little bit here, Carl, but
no, it's okay.
If you're on our IB platform and PTI Pro Direct, I think they're paying like 4 or 4.5 on just your balances. Now the other places don't do that, but they are.
Well, that's because guess where it's sitting in the 4 week and 13 week bill.
Yeah. No, I mean they're paying you that.
Well, I understand but they're they're liking it.
They're liking it
because they're getting 75 basis points on it.
Well, they're liking it because they're charging somebody else. Six or seven.
The
margin loan, duh. I mean, everybody thinks that when we don't, because we're just a brokerage firm, but if we were a clearing firm, if we were RBC or if we were IB, that'd be nice. It used to be Mesro or those kinds of places. They used to make all their money on interest. Not on brokerage. I mean, half the people you're paying 2%, and the other half you're charging 7%. Duh.
Well, look, isn't that the model of a bank, right?
Yeah.
You borrow short and lend long. Yeah, what's the problem with this? I don't have any issue with it. But that's the thing is, I look at these, I look at the things that are going on in the market right now, and I say, okay, you can say, well, but I want to be in these, in these stocks that have caused the index to go way up. Okay, the Metas of the world, right? And you saw what happened the other night, right? You got it in the teeth. Now, are you going to sit on that? And the answer is, for a lot of people, and this has been the mantra for the last, 10 years, buy the dip. Do not sell.
Turn on your TV and listen to 5 people telling you only the morons are selling, the rest of the people are buying in.
Everybody else is buying because it was down. Right, and the problem is, yes, that works most of the time. And the one time it doesn't, you lose half your money.
Well, I look at the Tesla situation here, and first of all, you might have the answer to this, but I'm suspicious from, I won't say day one, but from day 12 years ago. If you were to take away all the energy credits these guys got, did they ever make any money? I think they must have made some. And if you erased every energy credit, did they ever make a dime?
Well, no, but this has been my complaint all along with Tesla as a company in terms of trying to invest in it, and it's the reason that I've never owned a share of the stock. Okay, is that what drove their price appreciation was essentially the company's a tax farm.
Yeah.
Okay, and has been. I mean, that's basically how they.
But that's pretty much ended, right?
Well, pretty much, yeah. And then here's the problem. Now, they've got negative free cash flow.
Well, you can't.
I got them at like 80 or 100 times earnings, which for an auto company,
86 times as of or 90, I think, with the with where they ended up because it actually went up a little bit.
Yeah.
Excuse me, 90 times and oh, by the way, free cash flow is negative. You know how long you get to do that? Not forever, right? Because you'll run out of cash. So, and oh, by the way, just on the wire this morning, which came across my my trading stuff. Volvo, okay, not exactly a brand new entrant in the car market, right, has figured out how to game the tax credits and customs duties to essentially bring Chinese EVs into the United States and get the...
Volvo, aren't they from Sweden, aren't they?
Well, originally, then they sold out and became a subsidiary of Ford.
Okay.
Okay, which, by the way, is when their cars went to garbage. I had a couple of theirs, and the last one was Ford assembled. And while I didn't have reliability problems, I knew people with the same vehicle that did. The 850T that I had before that was fabulous, and of course, I kind of took it with a grain of salt. Well, guess what? The parts cost shot the moon, and the reliability, it was the last one I owned, was the V70, but. Now, apparently, they have figured out a double game, kind of like this offshore nonsense with Isle of Man and stuff that so many companies use. They figured out a double game as a way to get essentially cars that are, you've got the $7,500 credit to the buyer. That excludes cars with components sourced out of China. They found a way around that problem. And essentially brings the effective price of the car under $30,000. Now that's a 5-seater electric SUV.
They used to say at Pullman, it's a workaround. It's a workaround.
Well, and you know what? This is exactly the kind of things that you gotta watch. I mean, Geely. So they were Ford, and then Geely bought Volvo from Ford. Okay, so it was that was kind of weird. I mean. Geely was a offshore automaker that's over in El Slanty-Eyed Land that was known for making knockoffs of Western cars. I mean that was what they were known for doing.
Yeah, Dr. J said those guys used to put the Ford insignia damn near in the pickup truck.
Yeah, well, I mean that's the thing is it's like it was a head scratcher when the buyout happened in by the way it was in 2010 too. Analysts were looking at going, why in the devil would they do something like this? Okay, that doesn't make any sense. Well, guess what? Here we go, merging supply chains, bringing things down to, get down. So basically, quality of Volvo, cost of Geely was kind of the idea, right? Because Geely, had a terrible reputation as being a low-cost knockoff. Well...
Okay, let's talk more about this on Tuesday. I also want to ring up the article I talked a little bit yesterday with Dan, but... Maybe some with you about the Russia confiscating stuff from J.P. Morgan.
That's exactly what you should have expected when we started deciding we were going to steal their stuff.
Well, let's expand that to how much money really is invested in China back and forth. I was in Denmark in 1988, right, for a wedding of all things. The guy, the bride's dad was, he had auto parts store, but. He drove me around in this Volvo where they look like a box.
Yeah.
With four on the floor and a four-cylinder, roll-down windows and everything. I bet that thing's still running.
Well, probably. By the way, the big part of the code that Geely used to do this with Volvo dates to 1789.
Oh, God. Now, how would you even find that? You got the right guy. SP Futures up 40. NASDAQ Futures up 170. Have a nice weekend. Carl will be back on Tuesday. We'll tee up some of those other stuff. Good stuff on this GDP. I can't believe the change in tone in this thing. I mean, it's really something, but I'm not going to tell everybody to go read it because it's kind of, it's not the best. But back on Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.